They called it catfishing. I called it performance art. Every emoji, every carefully placed bro, every late-night confession. I built entire relationships from the safety of my screen, pretending to be someone I wasn't. A man, a charming, attentive, emotionally available man. I told myself I was giving women what real men wouldn't. Attention, intimacy, escape. And they gave me what I wanted in return. Secrets, selfies, and a window into their vulnerabilities. Until Ava. She was the one I couldn't handle. The one who didn't play by the script. When I ghosted her, she didn't just cry. She didn't just spiral. She died. Suicide. Now her sister is asking questions. Too many questions. I should have shut it all down. Burned the phones. Deleted the accounts. Walked away. But I didn't. I couldn't. Because once you've tasted that power, you don't just give it up. You double down. And when the person chasing the truth starts to look too much like your next victim, you do what manipulators do best. You lie. You charm. You destroy. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Perfect Lie. I don't remember the first woman I fooled. That's how long I've been doing it. Somewhere between the third fake profile and the 10th encrypted app, the lies stopped feeling like lies. They were more like masks. Performance. I wasn't scamming people for money. I never asked for it. I didn't catfish for revenge. I didn't need validation or attention. I wasn't lonely or broken or any of the other self-pitying cliches people use when they get caught. I did it because I could. There is an unspeakable power in making someone fall in love with a ghost you invented, a power that grows stronger every time they open up to him, while they pass by the real you in a grocery store aisle. Without a second glance, they never know it's me. They never even suspect. I don't look like a predator. It started with one profile, Liam B. 28, ambiguously biracial, former Marine, vinyl record shop owner, quirky but masculine, not too perfect, not too hot, just real enough to disarm. His photos were carefully curated from open Instagram archives, not the obvious influencer types, too fake. I used men with soft smiles, private accounts, and clean hands. He was always holding something, books, guitars, a coffee cup. Eyes slightly averted. No dog. No gym selfies. Women trust men who are looking away. The bio was simple. Soft-spoken, loud playlists. I make coffee too strong and trust too easily. Liam was everything women wanted and nothing they feared. I found Ava through a friend of a friend's tagged photos. She stood out immediately, eyes too wide, smile a little too hopeful. Her account was private, but I could see just enough through the tagged pics to know she had no recent partner. The thirst was subtle, tasteful. No bikini shots, but she wanted to be noticed. I sent the first message. You probably get this a lot, but you have the most honest smile I've seen all week. Flattery laced with restraint. No emoji. Not too fast. I waited 18 hours before checking if she responded. She had. Do I know you? The dopamine rush hit me like heroin. I knew how this would play out. Ava wasn't like the others. She was intense. Too intense. She fell fast, yes. But she didn't fall dumb. She asked questions. Smart ones. Probing ones. About Liam's background. About his time in the military. She Googled the store he said he owned. Thankfully, I'd stolen the brand from a now-closed shop in Michigan. She found gaps. I covered them quickly, but she remembered. That made her dangerous. I should have dropped her sooner. But Ava gave me something I didn't expect. Control that felt warm, not cruel. She told me about her childhood, her eating disorder in college, the ex who called her too much. And I played the role perfectly, gentle, patient, feminist. They were just intimidated by your intensity. You deserve to be seen. She believed Liam saw her, and in a way, I did. Just not how she thought. The sexting came fast. She sent the first explicit picture. A soft, topless shot, strategically angled. She apologized afterward. I told her not to. I made her feel safe, like she had nothing to be ashamed of. She sent more. I saved everything. I never reciprocated, not once. Liam was shy. Liam was private. Liam had scars. Liam didn't like video. Liam didn't want to ruin the fantasy. And Ava, she accepted that, because he made her feel chosen. The guilt started around week 4, not because of Ava, because of how easy it all still was. She was articulate, educated, a trauma therapist. She worked in an office just 10 miles from me, in the same suburban sprawl of curated parks, gourmet donut shops, and live workplace communities that all smell like burnt espresso and concrete. She could have been me, if I'd made different choices, if I'd been softer, if I'd needed someone badly enough to believe in ghosts. I decided to end it. Hey, beautiful, bad news. I just found out I'm getting relocated. Out of state. Military contract. I didn't want to say anything before because it wasn't confirmed. This hurts more than I thought it would. She cried. She sent a voice memo. Breathless, fragile. I don't know what to say. You were the first person in a long time who made me feel safe again. I didn't reply. The next day, I deleted Liam's account. I told myself it was over. I was wrong. The first sign came from her sister's Instagram, at Lila in real life. A black and white photo of Ava, smiling into the sun. The caption, "You didn't deserve this. I'll never stop asking why." The comments said the rest. She was too bright for this world. I can't believe it. R.I.P. Angel. I'm so sorry, Layla. We're here for you. Did she leave a note? No one said it outright, but I knew. Ava was dead. It took me 4 days to confirm it wasn't a performance. I scoured the obituaries. Local paper, one sentence. Ava Renee Hill, 26. A soft light, extinguished too soon. No details. No funeral times. Private ceremony. I couldn't breathe. This wasn't supposed to happen. I had hurt people before, but never like this. Never permanently. I opened a bottle of wine, drank it in one sitting. Then I opened a second. That night, I almost messaged Lila. I wanted to say something, anything. But what would I write? Hey, your sister fell for a man that never existed. That man was me, but not me. She trusted a voice made of lies. I stared at the screen until my vision blurred. Then I deleted the draft and poured another glass. The next morning, I logged into my old monitoring burner. Lila had posted again. Grief isn't the only thing I feel. And then, did my sister ever mention someone named Liam? The bile rose in my throat. I slammed my laptop shut. I told myself she'd never find anything. I'd wiped Liam clean. Erased DMS, deleted photos, no IP trail, no tags. Still, the unease sat in my gut, like rot. I wasn't mourning Ava. I was watching the perimeter. 2 weeks passed, then a month. Leela stayed quiet. I allowed myself to believe she had let it go. I started building a new identity. This time I called him Dante. Latino. Skateboarder. Bartender. A little edgier. Perfect for TikTok girls in crisis. It was going well. Until one morning, I woke up to a private message on an old backup account I'd forgotten I still had access to, from at Lila in real life. Hi. I'm trying to find someone my sister was speaking to before she passed. Do you recognize the name Liam B? My chest tightened. She was still digging. Worse, she was expanding her reach. That day, I deleted Dante before he ever took his first breath online. I spent the next 3 days deleting caches, changing passwords, wiping metadata, and watching her. Then she posted this. I found something, screenshots. Maybe someone can help. The image attached was blurred, but I recognized the format. It was a conversation. My heart dropped. Ava had saved something. Maybe a full thread. Maybe a voice memo. I paced my apartment like a caged thing. I hadn't eaten in 24 hours. I was sweating through my clothes. What did she know? What exactly did she have? And most importantly, Who was she going to show it to? That night, I created a new identity. But this time, I wasn't Liam or Dante. This time, I became Claire. Sympathetic. Quiet. Female. A woman who understood grief. I found Lila's Facebook grief group. I messaged her. Hi, I just saw your posts about Ava. I lost my sister last year too. I don't know you, but I recognize your pain. If you ever want to talk, I'm here. She replied in under 10 minutes. We talked for hours. She told me about Ava. Her sweetness. Her sensitivity. Her addiction to red flags. She told me about how the police had laughed when she tried to report emotional abuse from a digital ghost. She told me how she wasn't giving up. I told her I'd help. I told her I'd seen someone like Liam on a forum. I told her I had a feeling he wasn't real. She believed me, and just like that, I was inside the circle. Chapter 2. When Grief Turns to Suspicion. Lila trusted me like I'd known her for years. She told me things most people would reserve for a therapist, or maybe a mirror. That's the thing about grief. It unzips people, makes them vulnerable in places they didn't even know could bleed. I fed her comfort, soft phrases, shared silences. I told her about a fake sister, Amanda, who died in a hit and run that never happened. I gave Amanda a laugh, a perfume, a playlist, and Lila gave me Ava. She sent me screenshots of her sister's last conversations, hoping Claire would recognize something. She didn't know she was handing them back to the person who wrote them. I just want someone to confirm he's real, that he existed, that I'm not losing my mind. She wasn't losing her mind. She was losing the battle. The messages Ava had saved weren't damning, but they were close. A few phrases I vaguely remembered writing, things Liam had said during a late-night text binge. You deserve better than silence. You make the world quieter. Don't apologize for needing more. They were romantic, gentle, terrifying. Because they sounded like a real man, the kind of man women fantasize about when they lie awake at 2 a.m. But Lila wasn't just searching for poetry. She was passing timestamps, IP data, phone logs. I could tell. Her questions were shifting. Do you think Ava could have been speaking to someone pretending to be someone else? Claire, have you ever heard of reverse catfishing? Do women ever, you know, pretend to be men online? I laughed when I read that one. Out loud, it was like watching a blindfolded woman feel her way across a cliff's edge and nearly stumble off, but somehow keep going. She was getting close. I deflected with care. I think people online can be anything. But pretending to be another gender, that's dark. That's dangerous. She agreed, hesitated, then asked, Can I trust you? That was the first time she'd said it, the first real test. I typed slowly. With anything. She sent the voicemail the next night. It came with no warning, no preamble. Just, this is the only thing that's haunted me. The audio file was under 30 seconds. It started shaky, breathing. A voice caught between a sob and a confession. Liam, I know you're not real, but I still love you, and I hate myself for that. A pause. Please, just tell me it wasn't a joke. Click. End. I dropped the phone. Literally. It hit the kitchen tile like a punch. My voice wasn't in it, not directly. I never sent voicemails as Liam, but the cadence, the pattern, the emotional rhythm, the things he said were repeated there in her trembling voice. Anyone with intuition could follow the emotional DNA and trace it back to the source. To me, I didn't message Lila back that night. I turned off the lights, sat on the kitchen floor, opened a new bottle of wine with shaking hands. Was that my breaking point? Not yet. Not even close. The next morning, she messaged me again. Claire, are you okay? That voicemail was a lot. I don't know what to do with it. She was testing me, watching for cracks. I forced my fingers to move. That broke me. I had to take a beat. I feel like I know her now. I offered to meet in person. Not because I wanted to, but because she needed to believe Claire was real. She refused. Good. Instead, she started sending me theories, bullet-pointed timelines, cross-referenced forum screenshots. She was becoming obsessed, her grief mutating into obsession. It was beautiful and terrifying. She emailed one of the text threads to a friend in IT, asked about traceable data, message headers, packet footprints. She even went back to Ava's therapist and begged for notes. And then she mentioned Reddit. "Claire, there's this subreddit for digital abuse survivors. Someone else described a guy named Liam. Different account name. Same exact tone." I froze. I knew what she was talking about. It was a girl I'd tried to lure a year ago. She got suspicious. Posted anonymously. I thought I dodged it. Apparently not. Lila asked if she should contact the poster. I told her I already had. That's when I knew I needed an exit strategy. I'd kept this game going for too long. Even predators need to rest. And Lila was smart. Too smart. She had files now. Screenshots. Names. Fragments. It wouldn't take much for her to connect the Claire persona to an actual email thread, or a shared IP address, or a screen recording with metadata. She didn't have proof yet. But she had momentum. And I had one option left. Terror. I created a third identity. Genderless. Anonymous. Something dark and fast and forgettable. I used a VPN, a burner SIM card, and a spoofed IP traced back to Toronto. And I messaged her, "You don't want to know the truth. Walk away, or you'll be grieving someone else." Short, sharp, cowardly. It was supposed to rattle her. It didn't. She responded, "You've just confirmed everything I needed to know. I'm not going anywhere." My blood ran cold. This wasn't grief anymore. This was war. She started going public. Not full exposure, yet. But strategic leaks. Hints. A breadcrumb trail. Twitter threads. "Someone manipulated my sister into loving a ghost. I'm not stopping until I unmask them." Reddit posts under pseudonyms. TikTok slideshows with cryptic captions and ominous music. The algorithm did the rest. Ava's story started going viral. Then came the journalists, podcasters, YouTubers, true crime TikTokers. They weren't interested in the truth, just the drama. Digital abuse, identity theft, reverse catfishing. And behind it all, me. Still invisible. For now. But the walls were closing in. Lila posted a new thread, this time detailed. She traced Liam's profile to a cached image archive, found a duplicate profile created in 2018 under a different name. She pulled IP logs from Ava's old email server, tracked login locations. One matched a cafe 2 miles from my apartment. Another, a library I'd used during the early Liam phase, a slip I thought I'd covered. Then came the doxers, the anonymous avengers with time, anger, and digital skill sets I couldn't match. Within 72 hours, they had a name, my name. The email came first. Subject line: "Are you the woman behind Liam B?" No signature, no threat, just curiosity. Then the text, a number I didn't recognize. "We know who you are. We're giving you one chance to respond before we release everything." I deleted it, blocked it, panicked, but it was too late. Lila posted the thread on a Tuesday afternoon. "I believe I have found the woman who pretended to be Liam B and manipulated my sister into loving her. This woman lives in Brookmore Hills, frequents the library near Eldridge Avenue, and used an IP address linked to multiple fake mail accounts targeting women. She didn't use my name, she didn't have to." The replies filled in the rest. An old classmate recognized my photo from a Zoom workshop. Someone else traced a quote I'd used to a Goodreads review I posted under my real name. Within hours, I was trending. The reverse catfish. Justice for Ava. Manipulation exposed. Woman behind the mask. My face was on thumbnails. My voice, clipped from a podcast interview I did 3 years ago under my real identity, was synced to Liam's text. People created side-by-side videos comparing Liam's tone to mine. They weren't wrong. Someone DM'd my boss. Another called my landlord. A neighbor knocked on my door and said, "You should be ashamed." I thought about deleting everything, wiping my digital life, running. But what would that fix? I had crossed the line too many times, buried the truth too deep, left too many bodies behind me, metaphorical and otherwise. But even now, with the world closing in, part of me still thought, what if I just made a new profile? What if I became Mason? Maybe someone younger, someone artistic, maybe from Seattle, maybe... Number, not this time. The curtain was down, the show was over, and I was finally center stage. Exposed. Chapter 3. The Unraveling. You'd think getting caught would feel like dying. It doesn't. It feels like falling through thin air. Weightless, disoriented, every second just before impact. I waited for the blow that never came. The cops. The lawsuits. The shame-soaked phone calls from family. None of it happened, at least not right away. What did happen was worse. Silence. A long, deliberate silence, like the internet inhaled and held its breath. And then, the dissection began. They picked me apart like a post-mortem. Reddit, Twitter, YouTube panels, feminist blogs. Everyone had a theory. She's a narcissist. This is sociopathic behavior. She's probably done this before. This is why women don't trust each other. They didn't know me, but they knew me. One video essay titled, "The Digital Predator Next Door," used my high school yearbook photo for the thumbnail. Another broke down why she targeted vulnerable women and what it says about power, gender, and online identity. That one had 1.2 million views in a week. They called me a monster. Some called me a genius. Most just called me dangerous. But Lila? Lila stayed quiet. No press interviews, no podcast circuit. She disappeared just after the viral drop, as if her work was done and she had no interest in dragging it out. She left me to the wolves, and the wolves came hungry. I lost my job. Not officially, of course, but when your employer suddenly discovers budget cuts the same week you trend on TikTok as the poster child for digital manipulation. You know, friends ghosted, neighbors whispered. My gym pass got mysteriously revoked. Even the guy at the wine shop wouldn't look me in the eye anymore. I stayed indoors, for days, then weeks, curtains drawn, laptop closed. But every so often I'd still check the burner accounts. I'd still watch. I couldn't stop. There's something cruel about watching strangers tell your story better than you ever could. The girl from London who did a spoken word poem about Ava's voicemail. The university class that used my case in their gender studies unit. The girl who dressed as the reverse catfish for Halloween with a half-masculine, half-feminine mask split down the middle. They all took my crime and made it content, and I hated them for it. Because they weren't wrong. I tried to write an apology once. It was long, confessional, full of poetic justifications. I didn't mean to hurt anyone. It started as a way to explore power. I was lost, but I was never cruel for sport. I saved it to drafts and never sent it, because it wasn't true. I did mean to hurt people. I just didn't mean to get caught. Then came the letter. A real one. No return address. Just my name. Handwritten in sharp, upright cursive. I knew it was her before I opened it. You once told me people reveal themselves in whispers. Ava whispered things she never said to anyone else. Not to me. Not to her friends. Just to you. And you turned her whispers into knives. You're not a catfish. You're not even a manipulator. You're a mirror. And Ava died looking into it. That was all. No signature. No threats. No mention of lawsuits. Just the truth, folded neatly like a scalpel. I didn't cry. Not yet. Instead, I did what I always did. I created a new account. Not for manipulation, not for power, just to watch. I found Lila again. She had started over. New city, new job. Less angry posts, more neutral ones. She'd even started sharing photography, a lot of nature shots, trees, water, fog. One post showed a single red scarf tied to a branch. No caption, just a comment. Closure is for the living. I started therapy. Real therapy. I told the truth, mostly. I didn't confess everything, not the full scope, not the number of women, not the names, but I stopped pretending it was harmless. I admitted the rush, the God complex, the hollow feeling after every conquest, the fact that I could only get off by pretending to be someone else. My therapist said I used masks to protect a shattered core identity. She was wrong. I was the mask. 6 months passed. The viral fury faded. The tags slowed. New monsters took my place. AI scammers. Political leaks. Fake priests. Grifters in vegan clothing. The internet moved on. But the shame stayed. It clung to me like old perfume. Subtle, but unmistakable. And then, something happened. I ran into Lila. In real life, it was at a bookstore, of all places. Downtown. A reading event. She was standing alone, thumbing through a memoir on grief. She didn't see me at first. I should have turned and walked out. But I didn't. I stepped beside her, close enough to brush her arm. She looked up, eyes locked. No panic. No scream. Just recognition. And a long, breathless pause. Then softly, "Do you ever get tired?" My throat tightened. "Every day." We stood in silence. People passed around us like static. She didn't say anything else. She didn't have to. She walked away. I stayed. I bought the book she was holding. It sits on my desk now, unopened. Not because I'm not ready to read it, but because I already know what's inside. Grief, truth, power. And me. I no longer catfish. I no longer create new men with soft eyes and safer voices. But the hunger hasn't gone away. It's quieter. Controlled. I go to group therapy now, a circle of broken people who lie for comfort and live in the spaces between shame and silence. I tell them the truth, not because I've changed, but because I finally want to know if I can. Ava's face still visits me sometimes, in dreams, in headlines, in playlists. She has become myth, and myth has teeth. I can't rewrite the story now, but I can stop writing new ones. Maybe that's something, maybe it's not.